Praise awaits you, our God in Zion. To you our vows will be fulfilled. You who answer prayer, to you all people will come. When we were overwhelmed by sins, you forgave our transgressions. Blessed are those you choose and bring near to live in your courts. We are filled with the good things of your house, of your holy temple. You answer us with awesome and righteous deeds, God our Saviour, the hope of all the ends of the earth and of the farthest seas, who formed the mountains by your power, having armed yourself with strength, who stilled the roaring of the seas, the roaring of their waves, and the turmoil of the nations. The whole earth is filled with awe at your wonders, where morning dawns, where evening fades. You call forth songs of joy. You care for the land and water it. You enrich it abundantly. The streams of God are filled with water to provide the people with corn, for so you have ordained it. You drench its furrows and level its ridges. You soften it with showers and bless its crops. You crown the year with your bounty, and your carts overflow with abundance. The grasslands of the wilderness overflow. The hills are clothed with gladness. The meadows are covered with flocks, and the valleys are mantled with corn. They shout for joy and sing.
One day Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." So they got in a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, are we going to drown?" He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him."
So today, our Bible reading, the calming of a storm. One, if you've been in church for a while, you have heard many times. Many, many, many times. So it's easy, isn't it? I know what this is about. Obviously, first thing I did, I read the passage and I made it about me. It's great. Straight, I jumped into it. The storm inside me, my anxiety, my overthinking, my feelings being pushed down every day into a little box inside me. And then every now and again, when I lose it, popping out just at the wrong moment, just in front of the wrong person. That's what this reading is about. It's all about me. Me, me, me. Because I'm great. I get to stand up in front of people. Everyone looks at me. I'm perfect. It's amazing. The central figure in that way of reading is you, is me. I've got main character energy, teenagers. Thank you. I am speaking to you guys. And I read the Bible with that energy. So every time I come to the text, I'm like, yep, me. So that's the first bit. It's all about me. Second bit, it's all about them. Then I can do some work. I can pick up some books, read the Bible for myself, do a bit of extra work. I can think, what's the context that this gospel is being written into? Who are the people it's for? Why do they need to hear this story? What is happening to them? It's all about them. The Gospel of Luke is a writing written into a time where all the structures that have held firm for generations are being removed. They're falling down. Empire, religious structures, institutions, the framework of belonging itself is eroded. And the writer of the Gospel writes into that time. The writer looks back at the time of Jesus, this is some time after Jesus' death, and sees meaning from the stories and movements of Jesus the man, Jesus of Nazareth, and sets about showing us how this man is also God. For me, this passage evokes Old Testament Genesis comparison. There is something about God subsuming Baal in Genesis, this other God, the God of the storm, the God of tempest, that you might kind of read into some of our Victorian writing that we have. There is our God, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Yahweh, who has taken over that mantle, has calmed the chaos. And that in this story, we get that evocation of Genesis in Luke's writing, the writer of Luke. Don't know who it is. Then the gospel writer is pointing to who will order the chaos, the destruction of the empire, the religious systems. Who will order that? And it doesn't escape me that the writer of Luke is also the writer of Acts and is writing into a newly formed religious community and trying to give them foundations by which their faith and their community continues. Faith in Jesus is the foundation. Faith in Jesus is what we need. Faith in Jesus can calm the storm of this world and of our hearts. There we go. Sermon's over. Quickest one you've heard from me. There's more. There always is, isn't there? Thinking, ah, great, it's a quick one. There's more. So it was all about me. It was all about them. And you know what the next answer is. If you've ever been in church, it's all about Jesus, is the next one. But I have to read this in my context. There is something about who I am and who it comes to be. How do we do this thing of faith, relying on God, relying on more than the structures of our lives, when we live in a society, historically, you may not feel this right now, and I'm not saying that this is how you feel or how your life is going out, but historically, as a people in this part of the world, we are in the top 1% of wealth that's ever been. We have structures that we rely on mostly. We have a doctor's surgery of two. I always wander into the wrong bit when I go to the GP at the top of this road, being a new person to this community. We have the council, we have traffic lights. I remember the story of a comedian who from South Africa who moved to America and said, you really believe in your traffic lights here. The light changes and you just walk out, you don't even look. And I understood then, yeah, I've been raised in a context, and the South Africans laughing because they know the truth. You don't step out in front of the cars. I've really been raised in South East London in a context where I trust in the structures around me. I trust in the infrastructure. I trust in those in governance. I trust in traffic lights. I trust my doctor, the doctor's surgery. I trust all these things. And how can I trust God when I practically feel like don't really need much from God? But then there's my lived experience of, well, I know from just looking at the world right now and talking to people, even with all these things that we can trust, that we don't feel it. It feels like all our structures are falling apart. The empire, the institution, the places and communities that gave us belonging and a sense of belief and a sense of well-being aren't what they used to be. I hear it a lot. I might argue back and say, were they ever the things that could really give us a sense of security and safety? And into that, we have the question at the end of our gospel from Jesus. Where is your faith? Jesus cuts through and it feels heavy. Where is your faith? Now, the way I do theology, and I realized when I started studying, naturally I do this, and it just so happens to have a label. It's called liberation theology. But the way I do it is I ask some questions of my God talk, of my understanding of the Bible, and of how I apply it. And these questions are, how does this liberate, free me or others from oppression and injustice? So how does this liberate, free me from oppression and injustice? How does this work in my lived experience? Because actually sometimes we in the church have tried to deny people's lived experience rather than engage it. And do I need to reimagine the religious symbolism and conventions based on my reading and my lived experience? That idea of holistic, I am a whole person with all the bits of me engaged all the time. Sometimes I've been forced to squash bits of me into little boxes that do not work. And they do not feel like liberation. They do not feel like wholeness. To engage with what it's like to be a person who believes. Where is your faith? That question seems to me, in the hands of institution, been used to oppress people. To say, you aren't enough, you need to be better, you need to believe what we say you should believe, and then you'll be okay because God will provide. When I put my thinking up against that thinking up against my lived experience, it doesn't work. It breaks down, and is why so many of my friends raised in church will never entertain faith. It doesn't work for them when they come across the real world for them. So how do these words from Jesus, where is your faith, how do they free us from oppression? How do they stop being things that bind us in fear rather than bring us to a place of knowing God's abundance? Well, if I put together the all about me, the all about them, and move towards it's all about Jesus, I get something that I think helps me to understand this. We're not to rely on empires, on religious structures, on the things that feel like safety, because they fail, they fade. They're built on human endeavor. They're built on systems, ideas, imaginings that haven't always included everyone. As individuals, we know when we've been in those systems because we don't quite work there. We can change ourselves a little bit. We can get to a place where kind of we look like we're getting on. But deep down, it feels wrong. It feels harmful. We're not supposed to rely on those things for our sustenance, for our living. We're not supposed to be in the silos they create. And they are kingdoms of this world, not of God. They lead us into othering people who don't belong to them, because those people who don't fit into those structures don't look right, don't feel right, and they just make a lot of noise. They're stopping us from kind of getting on, aren't they, those people who don't fit in those structures. They're the ones who ask the questions, the hard questions in Sunday school. Like, how come you said God is all loving and then you read a story about Noah? I was that kid in Sunday school. Luckily, I wasn't told to shut up. I wouldn't be here right now. They ask questions of the structures that say, why is it like that? Why does this feel so bad? But you're telling me it's good. So that othering comes from the structure, not from us, because we look at that person, we'd go for a drink with them, we'd have fun, but in the structure that person looks unreasonable, angry, unhelpful. But God loves us all individually as we are. Yes, bits to be knocked off so that we walk towards a life with Jesus and being like Jesus, sorry. But we are to come as we are. So we do live in the storm created by these institutions. We do have the issue of the world around us. We cannot run away from that. One of the things that many Christian communities have done is to isolate themselves from the world. The best way of doing things is to not be in it. And we have historical precedent of our religious forefathers and mothers, the desert fathers and mothers who at some point buried themselves in the desert to be closer to God, or locked themselves in cabins. And some of the writing of these people are unbelievable. They illuminate my faith. But we can't all be one of the desert fathers or mothers. In fact, I can't think of a worse thing than to bury myself in the desert. I am called to be in this world. The storms of it, the pain of it, the uncomfortableness that it comes with. And I'm called to be a witness to the way God's calling me to be in that world. It would be easy for me to stop there and leave you with that, but I think there is some thinking about what this looks like, feels like, and can be individually for all of us. We're going to have prayer ministry during communion. Ian and Peter are going to pray with and for people. And if it's something's come up for you in this moment, please, please do take time to do that and pray. But I'd love to just take a minute now. In fact, I'm going to give you one other piece of information. If you want to kind of delve into Luke, the Gospel of Luke, a little book that might help with that is a book by Tom Wright or N.T. Wright. He writes under both monikers, and it's called Luke for Everyone. It's really good. A lot of my kind of understanding at the beginning of context and place and how to think about this book comes from that. So again, if you want to delve deeper, look at that book, Luke for Everyone. It's like, well, I looked on Amazon, it's like £7. But you could borrow it from the library. N.T. Wright's one of those really famous scholars that actually gets into normal libraries. There's all sorts of ways to get it. But if you want to delve deeper, that's one way of looking into it and seeing how kind of the writer of Luke is expressing how we live our life as the fall of empire, as the fall of structures happens. That might be helpful. But also there's prayer, there's thinking in ourselves and with others. So I'm going to give us a minute silence. If anything I've said, anything from the psalm, any of the other gospel, any of the other Bible readings that have come through our liturgy, is speaking to you, if there's a way in which God is trying to nibble at your ear, maybe you hear the audible voice of God. Maybe you don't. Maybe it's that little small voice in the back of your head that's like your conscience. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's through other people speaking to you. God will speak to us and calm that storm and teach us how to live our life in this world and what we're called to do in the places we are. So just take a minute, silence, think through that. And then I'm going to ask you for another minute just to talk to someone next to you and say one way in which God has spoken to you in the past or now. Okay, that's been about a minute. Feels long, doesn't it? Silence is one of the things that can help us to hear, to reflect, to embed learning and thought. And to hear from God, we need to make space. Now, I want you to turn to someone near you, for all those who aren't internal speakers. So turn to your left or your right, whichever makes sense. And I want you to just talk to someone and say, have you ever heard from God? Maybe it's generally not an audible voice. I'm going to say that out loud right now, because people often, when they say heard, they think I'm telling them you've had to hear the audible voice of God. It's generally not, actually. Very few stories I've heard the audible voice of God. But there'll be things that you've picked up. So just say to the person next to you, have you heard or felt, or somebody else has told you maybe something from God in a way that helps you understand the storm around us and the life, the storm inside us. I'm really aware that for some people this is a really hard thing to do. For other people this is an amazing thing and everyone loves it. Whatever you felt in both situations is okay. Both in the silence and in the talking to others. I offer them both to you as ways of hearing from God and working towards a life spent trying to be salt and light in the chaos and the storm around us.